show.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to the Entrepreneur Circle, where we've built a community that shares lessons learned throughout our journeys, celebrate wins, our eureka moments, and embrace the F word, meaning failure, which I've come to realize that failure is success in progress. I'm Eric Cabral, your host, a husband, a father of two brilliant girls, and I've been called a heart-centered entrepreneur by my peers and mentors. My mission in life is to make the world a better place, one mic at a time. So I'm happy and humble to have you join in on that mission. And I hope that by the end of the show, we would have added value in your life. So if you're ready to jump into the circle, let's get to it. Hey, I'm so glad you're here because I don't often get the opportunity to share with you exactly what I do and what we do here at Honor Your Brands. So we help the folks in our community and our clients to launch a podcast and then produce them on a weekly basis. We also help to promote each episode with close to a dozen social media posts that consist of quote cards, sound bites, and video clips. And then we post them for you on your socials automatically. So if you're a business owner with a ton on your plate, and a podcast just seems super overwhelming, I get it. We don't need one more thing to worry about. So let me and my team at On Air Brands do the heavy lifting each week so that you can focus on what you do best, which is to build your business, have more time to pour into your family and your community, or just plain chill and recharge. So feel free to email me at Eric at On Air Brands so that we can book time together to chat about how we can align with your mission and how you can align with ours, which is to make the world better. One mic at a time. Now back to the show. Welcome back, folks, to another episode of the Entrepreneur Circle. I am your most happy and humbled host. As usual, I have an amazing person with me today by the name of Justin Janowski, and we're going to dive deep into his story and his life and how he helps people, more specifically, Christian founders and entrepreneurs who are out there making a difference in the world. But first off, I just want to say hi and welcome to the show, brother.
Thanks for having me, Eric. I'm excited to be here with you.
Yeah, me too, man. I'm so happy to have this opportunity to get to know you more, because I know that we've had conversations over the past, you know, I think early in the summer. Here we are. If you're listening and you're in the future, summer of 2023, and here we are moving into the fall. But let me let the folks at home and people in their cars and running on a treadmill know a little bit about you. So Justin has been crushing it in the sales and leadership space and the business game for about 17 years. He, from his early days as a successful, anyone from Cutco, I have much respect for. but he was a sales rep and manager there, where he picked up a ton of incredible sales skills. His current mission as the founder and CEO of Faith to Influence is to help Christian coaches supercharge their business and help them with sales strategies so that they can spread their impact far and wide with integrity. So yeah, again, brother, I'm so happy that we're going to be able to dive into this and your story.
Yeah, let's roll.
Yeah, let's do it. So eureka moment in your life or in your business that caused a major change or pivot.
Yeah, I had been in sales, direct sales, for about 10 years. And I had hired a couple of coaches. And one of my coaches was Ben Skemper, and he started a mastermind called Epic Impact. And there was six people in the mastermind at the very beginning, and we were having these mastermind calls. I ended up being on these group calls for years, and they were always an hour, almost exactly, maybe an hour and 1 minute or two or three, never more than an hour five, except for one time in 4 years. And it was this particular week that I'd just taken a job in Chicago, new financial advisor with a company there. And it was a really nice opportunity with a great team. And we had this call. And at the beginning of the call, Ben called out one of the guys in the group and said, "You're not living your truth." He said, "You're the one guy on this call who's saying this and doing this and not really living out who you really are." And to this man's credit, getting called out in front of everybody, which this never happened again in that that group ever either. It was a unique instance. But he got called out like that and he owned it. And he's like, yeah, you know, you're right. And I remember him crying and really owning the situation of how he wasn't living his truth and he was not showing up at his best. And once he finished this like deep empowered share, somebody else raised their hand and said, hey, actually me too. I'm not living my truth. And they had like some big confession about how they're not living their truth. And it was really empowered and powerful and a lot of tears. And every single one of these guys took a turn and basically like owned the deepest, darkest stuff in their life and the ways in which they weren't doing what they were meant to be doing or weren't doing it at the level they were meant to be doing. I was, it ended up being a 2.5 hour call. Everyone had shared except for me. And I was walking back to my car. I had been at an event throughout the night. I was at a sporting event, like just listening in my earbud, not realizing it was going to be this long. And I'm on my way back to my car and Ben says, hey, Justin, what about you? And I said, man, I think I'm living my truth. I had nothing to share. I said, thank you for your vulnerability, everyone. This was really, really fun to listen to, but I think I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And 30 minutes later, I get off that call. I'm walking down the apartment to my or down the hall to my apartment. And I felt like I got hit in the chest by a message from God. Like first time in my life, I just felt like God like really hit me with something. I almost went weak at the knees. And I felt like God told me in that moment that I was not doing what I was meant to be doing. I was supposed to be working with people from the inside out rather than the outside in that I thought I was doing in a financial way. And that I was meant to be a coach. I was meant to be doing what Ben was doing. Like that was my calling. And I remember calling Ben. I felt it so clearly. I called Ben and I said, I think I need to quit my job and become a coach. And he asked a lot of curious questions. He was concerned, I think, and then eventually realized I was serious and said, well, when do you want to do this? And I said, like immediately. And I went and quit my job the next day. And my boss was furious. He dropped F-bombs, told me it was a horrible idea. And how qualified am I to be a coach? Like, I've got this great effing opportunity in front of me. And what am I thinking? And cast a lot of doubt and told me to take the weekend and think about it. And I did. I took the weekend and thought about it and told him the same answer on Sunday. I just knew it was true that this is what I was meant to do. And so when I quit my job, my brother said, if you're going to be a coach, you can do this from anywhere. Come live. He was stationed in Colorado with his family. He's like, we've got a guest room. Come live with us for free while you get started. And it sounded like an adventure. I thought I'd go there for 3 months and come back home to Milwaukee. But I accepted the opportunity and like moving out there led to me meeting my wife, obviously my family now and the work that I'm doing now. There was more to the story, but that was the biggest turning point of my life.
Wow. So you were on this call. And so it wasn't a physical room you guys were in. Was this it was a call? Everybody
yeah,
was on the phone.
It was just a call. Yeah.
Okay. And then as you were you fully engaged or were you distracted while people were sharing their truths?
I was initially distracted. I was at a college basketball game. Somebody had given me tickets to. My boss had given me tickets. Gotcha. Yeah. He'd give me tickets to a college basketball game. I was sitting there in the crowd and I was like, what is happening right now?
Right. Yeah. So there's no way you could really fully dive in with that distraction. So then as they go over to you, you're like, hey, I'm living my truth, even though I kind of like probably heard 2% of everybody's truth. But what was going on in the moment as you were headed home and you got hit in the chest with this message? And I love that. That really hit me too personally about, you know, working with people not from the outside in but inside out. What was the context of your life in that moment? Was there sorrow? Was there joy? Do you remember? Because usually when God makes sends a message, I typically find, and this is personally, and this is, I'm just making a blanket statement, we're either, you know, in great love or in great suffering. So that's my crux of the question there. Like, what was happening in the context of that moment?
Well, it's interesting. I was excited. I was happy. I had just taken a job. I'd 1 month into this job in Chicago, and it was a big decision for me to move from Milwaukee to Chicago and take this job. The man who offered me the job, somebody I knew and respected for a long time, he had recruited me for like a year and a half. He gave me tickets to a Packers playoff game. He drove me around in his Tesla. He had me come down to events that they were holding in Chicago. Like, he really like loved on me and took care of me and invited me. And I made this big decision to take that job, and I was 1 month in. So I understand why he was so upset. They had made a lot of plans around me joining the company, but it was this, I mean, it was a crazy, crazy decision to quit the job right after I got it. And I was loving the team. I was loving the opportunity. And I just somehow, like, I knew that this was what I needed to do. And it was so clear that I couldn't be shaken off of that idea the moment I had it.
Was there anything leading up to that? Had you been thinking about this? Was there any duress?
No, I thought if you would have asked me the day before, I would have told you I'm going to be a financial advisor for the rest of my life. Like, this is a career that builds over time. I've been doing it for 4 years with another company. This is what I'm going to do. And I found my long-term team, my long-term opportunity. But I had thought about being a coach years prior, and I'd let that go.
Wow. So then when you received the message, how were you so clear? Like, yeah, this is clearly not me. This is the message. Like, and I have to move, because it's a big, it's a change that has a ripple effect, right?
Yeah.
In the good and the bad, in any, you know, from anyone's perspective, you know, some people are receiving that in a bad way. And like, those guys had to find a new you. And, but for you, it's gonna, but yeah. So how did you know it was the truth?
I remember walking into my apartments, going into my bedroom, sitting down on the bed and thinking about it for a little bit and just sitting with it for a little bit. It's hard to even explain now. Now, I was single. I wasn't married. I didn't have kids. And so, like, it was probably easier to be bold in that moment than like it would be if God delivered a message to me now. Although he did deliver a crazy message to me once I was married and had our first baby, and I acted upon that one too. But in this case, like, I was single, so I was in a position where I felt like I could be bold. But I sat on the bed and I just, it's hard to explain like how I had that much conviction and that much certainty when I didn't think about it until that day. Prior to years ago thinking about being a coach. But it just, there was just a knowingness. And I will say, at the game, while I was like distracted, it was more like I was distracted from the game than the call. The call took me over. I did listen to what everyone said. I was like, whoa, like, what is happening? It distracted me from the game. And I was way more into the call than I was into the game. And so I received everything from everyone else. And then I guess God was working on me. And I don't know how to explain it other than I just knew, like, I absolutely knew. And I think that's rare. And it hasn't happened to me in my life like that. I wanted to make a change that was that significant, that I felt that certain about, even though from an outsider's perspective, it probably sounded kind of crazy.
Yeah. It's pretty wild, but obviously working in your favor, you know, building faith to influence. I don't know if I mentioned your podcast as well, for everyone who's listening, you know, after you listen to this episode. And I highly suggest jumping over to Justin's show, Faith to Influence, there as well.
And our show is Sales Strategies for Christian Coaches.
There you go. Oh, there's another one.
Yeah. That Faith to Influence show is old, but that was the original show when I started my original business, but Sales Strategies for Christian Coaches now.
Gotcha. Yeah. You didn't put it in the same feed, or decide to put it in the, just change the artwork and the name, you know?
Maybe that would have been a good idea. I probably needed you advising me at the time.
But yeah, that's good. Okay. Yeah. Cause I did see a couple. I was like, oh, that's not Justin, but, I guess I was wrong. So you got the message and you took action. How soon, how quickly were you obviously letting your company know I'm moving on.
Yeah. He was so upset. It hurts my heart to think about how upset he was, and you know, that I hurt him. We've repaired our relationship, and, actually they're my financial advisors at this point. But I told him on Friday, told him again on Sunday. They didn't need any kind of notice from me. I think he was just like, okay, well, if you're going to do this, just get out of here. And I broke my lease, and I moved like a week later to Colorado, just started driving across the country. And my coach had a sales training that he'd put together. And it was like an 8-hour audio on sales and influence and persuasion. And I listened to this 8-hour audio on the drive from Wisconsin to Colorado twice. And I held my first sales call at the end of that drive while I was still driving and made my first sale.
No way.
But I moved quickly.
Wow.
Yeah. But then the company that was coaching me offered me to work with them as a sales rep like a month later. And I thought, I do still have a lot to learn. And so I jumped in with them rather than going out on my own. So it wasn't Faith to Influence, wasn't born there. It was just my own little coaching business for like a month or two. And then ended up moving into working with Epic Impact for 4 years before starting Faith to Influence.
Okay. Where I'm sure, you know, you could learn a ton and pick up a bunch of new skills like you did at Cutco and others. So you made the first sales call on the drive after listening to this, I'll call it a tape. I'm old.
Yeah.
twice. did you close that sale?
Yeah. And this is funny. I don't know how this reflects on Cutco, but I did make that sale. I closed the deal with a guy named Alex, and he was like a 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid, like really young. Cutco works mostly with college students. He was running a branch office, like just a summer office, then going back to college. And his division manager, who's older, and I think division managers at Cutco at the time took a lot of like ownership and probably still do in their younger developing leaders, and maybe too much. So his division manager called me the next day. I knew him. He knew me not well, but we knew each other. He called me the next day and basically threw all the same question marks that my former boss had thrown at me, all the reasons why I'm not qualified to be a coach and I just did this on a whim and what am, and like basically demanded that I give the money back to the sale I had just made. He paid me $400. That was the first payment to the agreement that we had at the time. And he demanded that I gave it back. He said, I'm very influential at Cutco. Like if you want to do business and sales with anybody at Cutco as a coach, like I can be your advocate or I can really hurt your reputation with this. And so like he basically threatened me and demanded that I give this this kid his money back. And I was so like at a loss, but I ultimately like allowed him to bully me and I gave the kid's money back. And I coached him for free after that. I'm like, well, I still want to fulfill my end of the deal. So I made my first sale and lost my first sale in 24 hours. And that was kind of a dramatic roller coaster to start.
Oh man, but clearly your skills and your sales and your ability was strong enough to give you the confidence like, okay, I'm going to do this right, even though there's a minor setback there, but yeah. That's wild. So you're with, you said Epic for several years.
Yeah.
And then What transpired? Somewhere along that way, I'm sure you met your wife and then started a
I met my wife within 4 months of moving to Colorado, which was interesting. Oh, wow. Epic Impact was in Denver. I was in Colorado Springs. Within 4 months of moving there, Epic Impact hired me and I met Kara. And then my brother, who I was living with, got shipped off to Germany and Epic Impact moved to California. And if I had not met Kara in this very tight window of time, I would have just gone back to Wisconsin or maybe gone to California with Epic Impact. But I had a very small window of time to meet Kara. And so because I met her, I stayed there and I worked remotely with Epic Impact until Kara married me. And then once we got married, we moved to San Francisco, joined the company out there. I sold a couple $1 million for Epic, helped them grow from 6 clients to 70 clients.
Wow.
And was the lead salesperson. And we didn't have any technology. We didn't have any ads. We didn't have a website. We didn't have anything other than our voices to grow this business. For some reason, we just really lagged on that until the very end of my time there. So I had to get really good at working through my network, meeting people, becoming a master of referrals to make these sales. I was the lead salesperson. And eventually, like a lot of personal development companies become very spiritual. But not Christian. And my background is Christian. That's my faith is really important to me. And Epic became more and more and more spiritual without being Christian. And over time, there began to feel like there was more of a divide between my faith and like what we were sharing with our clients. And I remember I had gotten a big raise and we'd moved back to Colorado to have our kids. and Epic had like doubled my income because I had thought about leaving. I had another opportunity. They like doubled my income. They let me move back to Colorado and work remotely with my family, gave me a promotion to sales manager. And Karen and I had our first baby, and she left her job at the Air Force Academy as a psychology teacher because I was earning enough now that I could provide for our little family. And she was going to stay at home the first week of Grace's life, or the first year of Grace's life. I took 3 weeks off for paternity. My second day back to work, I got my next message from God. And it came through someone else. It was a conversation with one of the clients at Epic. And ultimately, he said he had been at the last retreat, the last live event they ran, and I wasn't there because we were so close to birth. And he shared that he thought that somebody of strong Christian faith, if they came into that community, could be drawn away from Jesus because of the spirituality and what was taught and how it was taught and the environment of it all. And I had been feeling like that divide growing for a while, but I was just kind of ignoring it as much as I could. And after he said that to me, like, I felt like I had to face that. And that same day I told Kara, I think I need to leave. I think I need to start my own business and like create a Christian version of this. I felt like I really considered what he said and it felt clear again. Now, this time I didn't quit the next day. I took 1 month with Kara and we prayed, we cried, we talked to people we trusted because now, like, you know, we had this new baby at home. I remember Kara crying when I called and told her this because it was just shocking. Day two back at work, she's just quit her job. I'm going to quit my job and start a business. But that's what we ultimately both felt was the right decision a month later. And I did quit that job. And that was like the second big calling from God and the second big bold decision. And I launched Faith to Influence in December of 2018. And I remember those first few months feeling really scared and not being certain whether or not I could provide for my family and whether or not this was responsible or whether or not I was good enough. And I remember tossing and turning at night over this decision and just like, you know, feeling excitement, but also fear at the same time. And Kara really supported me well. And I remember telling her, you know, give me 6 months. And if this doesn't show financial viability in 6 months, I'll go find a job. And I was thinking like, if I could make 60 grand in the first year, like maybe we could make it. And God had more in mind. And I collected over 250K in revenue the first year, which for solopreneurs starting out coaches, like that's a really hard thing to do. And it was just, you know, lift off from there. And this is definitely for real my life's work.
Dude, wow. Congratulations, man. That's amazing.
Thanks.
You know, jumping in with a, you know, there's always the talk with the CEO of the household, you know, our wives, and saying, hey, I'm going to do this crazy thing, but I could always go back, you know, just in case, you know, but you know, deep in that, you're like, I'm not going back.
Right.
But how amazing is that? Like you planned for 60K and then you made well above that. As you're sharing and I'm realizing and you're reminding me of the powerful salesperson I have in front of me, because we've had some pretty good conversations in the past about some strategies and some things that I'm looking to in the future. Now I'm going to be selfishly asking you for advice here, but I've noticed the audience benefits, right? They're like, oh, Eric asked those questions too. But in terms of the way it evolves, can you share like, So there's the Cutco sales, there's the sales for Epic Impact, and then now there's the sales and the packages that you have. What are the sort of commonalities between those things? You know, because I know there's some powerful sales techniques that I'm sure you're aware of and you could kind of share with the audience here. So what are some of the few things that you could share in terms of, because we're all in sales, so however you want to like advanced or beginner, share some sort of ideas, and then I want to get into kind of like some of the I want to get to the packages that we were talking about back in the day, because I think that's a powerful strategy as well as your business evolves.
Yeah. So sales, I oftentimes find myself saying sales is sales, and people are people, and influence is influence, and it's pretty cross contextual in so many different ways. You know, one of the first things I learned at Cutco was to be in rapport with people, to be connected to people, to develop a trusting relationship with people, to have fun in conversations. And I think like that, we call it today connectivity in what we teach, has always been true. You know, people will trust people who communicate in the way that they communicate. And so we need to find a way to communicate in the language of our audience and make sure that they can receive the way we're communicating. And so I'm always paying attention really in the very beginning of a conversation to emotionally, how is someone feeling? And I'm trying to meet them emotionally where they're at. If they're really up and they're like, oh my gosh, my day's been amazing, I'm like, that's awesome. Give me some of what you have. That sounds great. Even if my day's been crummy, like, I'm just going to meet them at that high level. If on the flip side, like, they're down and they're like, I'm like, how's your day? And they're like, oh, it's been a crazy day. I'm like, oh my gosh, I've been there. How are you doing? Like, is this still a good time to connect? Like, I'm going to meet them emotionally where they're at, but I'm also going to pay attention to subtleties like their volume, their pace of communication, their tonality. And inside of my authentic range of my voice, I'm going to meet them in some of those things. There's a little bit of mirroring and matching. I'm going to make sure that I'm not trying to sound like the smartest guy in the room. I'm trying to communicate in language that we both understand rather than using abbreviations or certain things that like don't make sense to them. I know some people want to sound really smart and they're up here and their audience is here. And they're like, if they're disconnected, they don't understand. You've just broken rapport. And so being able to communicate in a way that feels safe, getting consent to sell, like just being honest and transparent with people, that feels great across all sales. And like what ends up happening is people oftentimes want to avoid being salesy or sleazy. And so what they end up doing on accident is avoiding seeming like they're trying to sell at all until the very end when they realize they have to say, okay, this costs this much. Do you want to do it? Like the person who's in multi-level marketing, you think you're getting lunch to like meet each other and like connect and like, you know, grow a relationship, but it's actually about this sales thing that they just bring in at the very end. And you're like shocked and disappointed. Like, oh, this was all like a bait and switch because mm-hmm. they didn't upfront be clear that they were selling something. And so one of the most important things we could do in any sales conversation is just be transparent from the get-go and give a great pre-frame where we say, like, hey, I'm really happy that we're connecting today. I want to get to know you and see if it's a fit for us to work together. And ultimately, I'll do that by asking some questions about where you're at, what your vision for the future is, what some of the challenges are that you're facing. If I can help, I'll give you some perspective right away today and then share more specifically how I work with my clients. And then you and I can decide either to work together or not work together. And either way is fine. Does that sound okay? Mm-hmm. Yes. We get consent to sell. We're very clear about what we're going to do. It's very transparent. They know we're going to make a decision. They're agreeing to it right now. Then it feels really honest. It feels really fair. People love to buy stuff, but nobody wants to feel like they're getting tricked.
Yeah, because I don't know if I've had this conversation with you, but there's always the aspect of, especially if you're good at this just naturally or you've developed this skill, but there's always some underlying, so there's something about you, maybe, you know, you were a swinging single guy for many, many years and, you know, you had to, you know, convince the girl to go on a date with you. That's sales, right? So you're selling yourself and you've developed these skills, but you don't count yourself as a salesperson. But it could be, if done incorrectly, like you said, feel very manipulative.
Yeah.
And I think it was you and I talking about this or someone else, but the idea that you're manipulating someone can go away if you just think about it as like, it's only manipulation if you don't have their true intention in mind. Like the you don't have a positive intention for them. It's all for you. Right? There's some negative aspect to it. So that gave me a little bit of ease. Can you sort of unpack that a little bit?
Yeah.
So people don't feel, because that's why people don't like sales, right?
Right. It's about our own intentions, our own heart, like what we're thinking about. That's why mindset is so important. I had a friend who was in my church, my small group, close friend for years in Colorado, who one day in my basement with some friends said, all sales is manipulation and all salespeople are manipulative. And I said, Sarah, like you know I'm in sales. You've known me for years. I'm a high integrity, honest person. Like, what are you talking about? And she held firm, like all salespeople are manipulative and all sales is manipulation. Like she just, that was her story. Mm-hmm. Imagine if God called her into entrepreneurship, called her into coaching, some kind of like gifting that she needed to give to people that required sales. She would avoid it at all costs because of the story that she has about what it is. So mm-hmm. like a lot of people who have this concern or story or fear that sales is manipulation simply will cut themselves off from opportunity. And I know people who begin coaching businesses or entrepreneurial opportunities and then get there and realize, oh no, like to coach and to lead and I have to make a sale. And they won't make sale. Like they will self-sabotage at all costs and not make sales because of the old story of what they think sales is. Now, my stories about sales are really healed. And I think some people need to heal their stories. They need to write a more empowering story. If you've got that old story, sales is pushy, sales is sleazy, sales is manipulative, you might write it down on a piece of paper, cross it out with a line, write next to it in big capital letters, not true, and write the more empowering truth beneath it and start to tell yourself that new story, that make it a soundtrack in your head, like John Acuff says. And for me, my stories about sales are that sales, you know, my job as a salesperson is simply to make it as easy as possible for the right people to say yes. I believe that sales, when done right, is good. Sales, when done right, feels good for both sides, whether there's a purchase or not. Sales, when done right, feels like coaching with an invitation at the end of it. It feels like leadership. It feels like love. I think sales helps if we sell the right product or service. We're ultimately helping people become more of what they want to become or get more of what they want in their life. And as long as we're willing to love and respect people, whether they buy or not, and recognize where our responsibility starts and ends and allow them to make a decision for themselves and let them go if it's not for them right now, sales can be really good, especially with a great product or service.
Mm. You touched on a few points there that I'd like to highlight, in that, you know, believing in the product or service, right? It's really hard to sell something that you don't believe in. It just comes off, even if you're really good. There's something in there that people can sell is off, right?
Yeah.
And I love how you mentioned mindset. Like, that seems like the very first step. It's like, create a healthy relationship around what sales is to you, right? Because eventually that is going to be a roadblock. But I think the next roadblock could be, and if you could help us here, is feeling worthy. Like, maybe you have a great product or service, but you don't feel worthy.
Yeah. Yeah, especially if you're selling a service that's coming from you, people feel like they're selling themselves. So you ask, like, what's consistent about sales and what changes? Some people, it's really easy to sell a product that they believe in, but selling themselves is a lot harder because it's so personal. And then putting a price on that feels even harder for many people. You know, we talk about the internal art of influence. And there's three pieces to it. One is your stories, which I kind of reference. Your stories about sales or money. People have blocks around money, but those stories are really important. A second piece that's really important is your emotional state. How you feel in any given moment directly affects the results that you get on that call, that speaking opportunity, whatever it is. But the third piece of it is your identity, who you believe yourself to be. And this is what you're speaking to, feeling like you're worthy. So many of us were told really negative or disempowering stories about ourselves when we were kids by mom and dad or by grandpa or by a teacher. And somewhere along the line, we decided to pick up those stories and believe them, that we weren't good enough or that we weren't smart enough or that we weren't worthy in one way or another. And that's not how God sees us. And, you know, if we're called to something, we're absolutely worth. Like, if you are called to do something that feels scary and intimidating for you, so much to the point that you're not sure if you're good enough for it, trust me, you wouldn't be called to this scary thing and still be trying to do it if you weren't good enough and meant to do it. But what we need to do is rewrite some of the stories we have about ourselves and who we are. And there's really three ways to really empower our identity or shift to a new level with it. And it's a journey. It takes time and it's worth the time. One is to tell ourselves new stories about ourselves. You know, there's a book, I mentioned it before, John Acuff wrote a book called Soundtracks. We've done some sales for John. He was in a prayer group with me for a few years. Great author, great guy. But he mentions, like, you know, we all have soundtracks running around in our head. If your soundtrack is, I'm not good enough, or maybe I'm not good enough over and over and over, and you've had that running for years or decades, we gotta scratch that tape. We gotta tear the old, what do you call it? The stuff you pull out of it. We got to pull that junk out of the tape. Mm-hmm. We got to break that thing in half. We got to put a new soundtrack on. And so a simple way to do that, the ribbon. Yeah. So we need to write some empowering I am statements. This might sound silly, but we could write, I am good enough. I am worthy. I am a great leader. I am a generous coach. I am a loving entrepreneur. I am an honest salesperson. I have something of great value to bring to my clients and to the world. And if we wrote these empowering statements and read them out loud over and over and over and over and over and over again, eventually we could change an old soundtrack. So that's one of the three ways. The second way is to surround ourselves with people who speak life into us, who believe in us, who empower us. You know, if you and I get on a call, we're going to encourage each other. We're going to feel better about who we are if you're with the right people. And so, are you in the right environments, the right communities, the right people? If you have people who are speaking death into you, they're speaking the negative things, they're speaking the old soundtrack that you're trying to get rid of, spend less time with them. Stop giving them so much of your energy and find relationships that are going to speak life. Make sure that you're being that person for others as well. And the third thing, and this is, you know, this is my belief system, but prayer. Like, God, help me to up level this identity. Help me to change the way I see myself. Help me to see myself the way you see me, and open the door to new possibilities and who I can be. Heal the parts of me that need to be healed so I can have an empowered identity and help people in the way that you're calling me to help people. Amen. Those things can help.
Yeah. It's funny, as you were saying that and you started going into your sort of prayer mode, I see, I saw a papal, like your shirt. You look like you could have a, anyway, in Catholic, you know, in my Catholic church mind, I see your shirt looks a little bit, but anyway, powerful stuff, dude. I love that. You know, let's start with the I am statements. Very simple, but very difficult, especially to create that routine and habit. People don't realize, especially from the old world, in my world that I came from, that the words I am, you know, obviously some of the most, if not the most powerful, in the scriptures, but when, in terms of how we use it, anything that follows that, right? I am blank, right? Creating that for yourself, manifesting for yourself, whatever you want to call it. It's so powerful. And I like how you're saying, just keep doing it, re-record, you know, I like to say, you know, just reprogram, like go to the next version of yourself, you know, 2.0, 3.0, whatever it is. And it takes time. It takes time, repetition. Like you said, I was listening to, before I found my faith of, and you know, it's been somewhat recent for me. It was Tony Robbins that got me out of the old school mindset of like limiting beliefs and all those things. So I needed that. Like you said, just re-record over and over and over and over and over and over. But I love that. And then surrounding yourself with people. Ah, so good. So good. You know, you are the average of the five people, those things. And then prayer is so powerful. And can you talk about this? Why is it that most people, and I think it's a cultural thing, and it's our fault. Like, Jesus has become somewhat of a joke, and I hate to say that, in terms of it's on t-shirts, Jesus loves you, Jesus saves, on bumper stickers. This is what I'm beginning to realize, why people kind of, like, people will go into blasphemy, but they'll never say this, they'll never joke about Muhammad, they'll never joke about other prophets. Why is it Jesus? And then, like, if you say Jesus too many times, or you say God too many times, people shy away, they go away, oh, he's a crazy person. Can you speak to that? And the thing is, once they discover, like, what it truly does, it's pretty simple and impactful and can change your whole life. I'll let you take it from there.
Man, that's an interesting point. I don't know if I'm just like in a little bubble, but I don't feel like I'm recognizing like Jesus being joked about. Something interesting that I see is, like, I see people who don't believe Jesus is God, like, loving on him, like, oh, JC, he's the best, he's so cool. Like, and they think he's like this great teacher and this great person, but not God. In which case, like, you know, his entire teaching would be founded on a lie, and he wouldn't be a great person if that weren't true. So it's hard for me to like put those two things together. Like, C.S. Lewis talked about it in a really eloquent way in Mere Christianity, and I won't be able to really meet the way C.S. Lewis talked about it, but he kind of made the argument that Jesus is either exactly who he says he is, or like the worst person in the history of the world, you know, like, to like, or crazy or completely nuts. So like, when you imagine, like, imagine if somebody showed up on earth today and just said, I am the Son of God, and in fact I am God, like, we're one in the same, I've come from the Father, like, they'd have to, if they believed it and it wasn't true, they have to be completely insane, like absolutely nuts, like loony bin kind of person. You wouldn't, you saw them on the street, you'd just be like, excuse me, and walk away. But everyone was crowding to him, and billions of people have believed this for so many years, thousands of years. And so, like, for somebody to be that crazy and get that many people to believe doesn't seem reasonable. So the other question would be, like, could he be lying about it? Could he be making it all up? And he got people to believe because he was this great deceiver. But if he had done that, like, what was the point? Like, he wasn't collecting money. He didn't, he wasn't getting women. Like, why have men done crazy things in all of history? Money, power, women. Like, the people around him were like, let's raise an army. And he's like, no, we don't want to do that. And like, oh, let's get some money. And like, no, like, you're just going to go into the home and let somebody invite you into their home and take care of you for that day. Don't bring any food with you. Don't bring any clothes with you. I'll let other people take care of you. But like, not in some like amazing way. He wasn't living in a palace. Like, he got nothing. He got murdered. All he had to do to keep his life was say, I'm not. He had to just like tell them what they wanted to hear, and they would have spared his life. He was killed for this. So like, there's no way. There's just no way that he's deceiving with nothing to gain. And there's no way that he's that crazy and believes something that's completely, completely untrue, that he could get, if he's that crazy, all these people to believe him. And so if you don't think that he's likely that crazy, and you don't think that he deceived with nothing to gain and everything to lose over and over and over and still had that level of effectiveness as an influencer, then the only other option is that what he's saying is exactly true. And if what he's saying is true, then everything else in the Bible is true. And so like, this C.S. Lewis, again, communicates this so much more eloquently. Check out Mere Christianity if you're curious about Christianity. But that's what I know about Jesus. And like, that's, I come back to that when I'm like feeling like question marks or concerns, like, yeah, like, I believe Jesus. And like, what was his big message? Love your neighbor. Like, is like most shared message over and over. Love God, love your neighbor over and over and over and over. And so I just come back to those things. If somebody doesn't know Jesus, like, if you've ever had a neighbor just like love you really well, a person, a friend, a leader, a mentor, a parent, somebody just love you really well. Like, if you think about the person who's loved you most well in your life, Jesus loves you more than that. You know, and that's his nature. And that's just a special thing. So I don't know if that's answering the question you asked exactly, but for whatever reason, that's what came through.
No, I appreciate that. My question was sort of an abstract question and a statement in terms of like I'm curious why people shy away from this conversation. Most people, and like you said, maybe you're in a bit of a bubble community where it's happening less, but I came from that area and I still encounter those folks. And I try to present the facts as you, in terms of like his impact, the evidence, the truths, they're undeniable. Don't ask the questions without seeking the source. Like, go to the source, go to the scripture, go to the facts. Like, this is the only person in the history of man as we know it came back to life and showed himself to hundreds and hundreds of people and speak and spoke and did sermons. And it's like, what? There's evidence of this. And that's always sort of one of my arguments. And I get really passionate about that too. I'm like, there's so many things. And I remember growing up, one of the other things, and I think it was in the 80s with the Shroud of Turin, my dad was all about it, my mom. And then at some point it got debunked. And then recently, over the past 10 or so years, they've done better forensic analysis and carbon dating. And they found that two to three guys that did the study back and debunked it, took a tiny corner of the Shroud of Turin and carbon dated something that was a piece of the cloth that was repaired. It was repaired. Mm. So they took it from the sample was incorrect. But anyways, if you look into that, that to me was proof positive as well. Because like when you know, they say don't marry science and religion, but in these cases, if you have to prove to the doubters, okay, we'll use science then, which is your religion. Mm-hmm. Let's go use that, you know?
Yeah.
And we'll prove using your religion that this is a real thing. Mm. So it's like, you can go down all these different avenues and you'll find what you want to find, whether you want to believe or not.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's no fact. There's nothing that goes against. And then the thing is God, it's like, he's just ever present. And if you open yourself up, he'll communicate with you. And people do it in the darkest of times. Why is that? Like, they'll only truly say, okay, I'm going to pray when they're, it's the absolute worst, and they'll never win everything else. They'll just float around. I don't know.
Yeah, why. I think somebody said something once that stuck with me. Like, you know, if you're having a good day, if you're making sales, if you're getting results, like God's blessing you, like get down on your knees and just thank Him for the provision, you know, and do the same. Of course, when you're not doing well, you know, is to thank Him and also ask directly for what you need. And, you know, I think it's some people think it's kind of taboo to pray specifically for like sales or income or things like that. Like they'll pray for health or other people's health. But praying for that sort of thing is hard for them. But for me, you know, I'm going to pray all the time. Like, God, help grow my business. Help me get more clients. Help me make more sales and grow my income and my profitability. And God, as you bless me in faith to influence, help me be more and more of a blessing to my community, to my neighbors, to my church, to my team, to my clients, and for the kingdom. Like, help me to give generously from what you give me. Amen. You know, that's the kind of prayer I'm going to pray all the time. And I know God's answering that prayer.
Love it. I want to get into the next segment, brother, but I wanted to share this one vision that came to me that I haven't mentioned before. And I thought maybe you'd appreciate it. I know we have a few minutes left here. So
yeah,
on my mirror, I wrote a thing on the poster that says, "Don't forget the pain." And I wrote that while I was going through some growth and to remind me that not to take it for granted and to remember the suffering so that I don't get overconfident, cocky, when success comes. So then now we're back, right? Everything's great. Business is flowing. We're growing again. You know, I got through that hump, and, you know, family stuff as well. And I see the reflection to the left into the shower door of the post-it in reverse. And the message to me was, what's the opposite of that? And I was like, oh, don't forget the joy.
Yeah.
Don't forget the glory. Don't forget the good stuff too. And I was like, oh, wow. But anyway, I just wanted to share that with you because like
that's he speaks epic. In many that's different amazing. Ways. Yeah. Wow. What a message. If everyone who's listening just takes that, I mean, those two ideas, those are resonating for me. Remember the pain and remember the joy at all times. Can we remember I've been in pain and I've been okay. I've been in joy and I've been okay. And there's going to be more of both of those things and they're both all right. I mean, like, that's beautiful. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah,
that's life.
Chills. It's life, exactly. But it's funny, we only speak to and we only really try to connect with God when we're suffering. And you're like, where are you? Help me. Where are you? Help me. It's kind of like this one guy, I Am Beggar on YouTube, has a really good animation to what you were speaking about with C.S. Lewis and Jesus. But he's like, it's like God's a vending machine. And then we're just like, we're like, come on, give me the stuff. Yeah, pray, give me the stuff. Pray, give me something, you know? But yeah, just a reminder to pray even when we're winning, like always.
Yeah,
remember,
thank
like
you God said, for your provision. Down. Thank you for taking care of me. Thank you for all you're giving me.
It's amazing. So I apologize for only giving a few minutes for this one segment,
We
have two that we'll breeze through, but embracing the F word, is there something you could share life lessons, you know, in terms of failure? Something where you fell flat.
You know, what's coming to mind, a couple of things. One, I mean, in my 20s, before I started Faith to Influence, like I consistently made about $40,000 a year. I made about $40,000 a year, year after year after year after year, different opportunities, different chances during commissions, in sales, as an entrepreneur, felt like I was successful. I was earning like $40,000 a year until I was, I think 29, I had my first six-figure year. And then 30, I started Faith to Influence at like 30, 31 and boom, $250,000 a year. And so in that growth, like it took me a long time in working on myself before I had like a breakthrough. It wasn't instant like it is for some people. And the other thing I'll share is I remember when I started Faith to Influence, I mentioned I was afraid. Like I remember the day before my first live event, my first retreat, which was 3 months into running my business. This was really going to be my first big income opportunity. And I just had eight men come into this live retreat. And I was going to make a $10,000 offer on the back end of it. And I remember the day before feeling so I'm not enough, so scared, like everything going wrong that day. And like a tremendous amount of self-doubt and sitting in a chair in the middle of the event space and literally crying, thinking I can't do this. And maybe I made a bad decision. And like having to surrender, having to let go and be like, okay, God knows what he's doing. Like he's got me in this and like, let go. And then like I woke up the next day, blanket of confidence. God just took care of me. And it was like six of the eight guys bought the $10,000 program with some sales I'd made before. We had over $100,000 booked after that first retreat. And like I was like, okay, I'm gonna make it. But the moment before things popped, I felt completely inadequate and like a failure in advance. And I had to just let that go and surrender it to God and trust him to be able to deliver through me the next day.
I love that. I love that too.
Powerful, man. I love, I have so much to say there, but I want to move on to, and we had to land the bird here. In one word, brother, how do you help people?
Sales.
Love it.
All things sales.
All things sales, but high integrity, high conversion sales. You know, where $10 million businesses are hiring us to do sales for them at their events. You know, it's a pretty cool thing to be able to sell in a way that feels really honest and really good, but also gets great results.
Yeah, I love that. Can you share a little bit about that if you have a few more minutes?
Yeah. Kind of two parts to my business. I work with brand new coaches, entrepreneurs between zero and 100K to help them design their programs, their pricing, their offers, and to sell it in a high integrity way and up level their mindset. And I call it, we have a 6-month sales school for coaches. I love that. That's my favorite work. Without ever marketing to it, without ever trying, I've been hired by 7- and 8-figure coaches to do sales directly for them at their conferences or on an ongoing retainer basis. People like Pete Vargas, Pedro Deo, John Acuff, Dan Miller, David Bayer, Dr. Darius Daniels, Founders Mastermind, Kingdom REI. I mean, some really amazing, successful companies have hired us to do sales for them. And it's all been word of mouth reputation, just like people asking and coming. And we do just as much business through that as we do in what I focus on 90% of the time. And it's just kind of all been a blessing from God. But it's cool that like David Bayer, who's a non-Christian, is going to come to us. He's doing $5 million a year and want us to do sales for him year after year at his events. And he knows I'm Christian. He sees my faith to influence big thing. He sees my cross. Like, and he's just like, yeah, these guys know what they're doing. And he hires us to do it. And so I think it's a really great compliment. And I love being able to do that and be a light in different ways to Christians and non-Christians and just do sales in a way that really converts, but also is so honest and transparent and good.
I love it, dude. I love it. Well, thanks so much, brother, for being here. Thanks for sharing space and time with me. I enjoyed very much our conversation. What's the best way that people can reach out to you?
You can check out the podcast, Sales Strategies for Christian Coaches. And I've got a free gift for everybody. Our coach's playbook. It's a sales playbook. It's got our 10-step process, some mindset stuff around sales. You can get that at www.goodsalespdf.com. That puts you on our email list. We'll send you an email. If you reply to that, I'll get it directly. Goodsalespdf.com.
Thank you. Appreciate that, brother. And looking forward to doing some work with you when when everything aligns and God syncs us up again. But yeah, awesome, brother. Thank you so much.
Same. That'll be fun. Thanks for having me, Eric.
That's it for now, folks. If you'd like to stay in touch with the show, you can contact me directly at eric@onairbrands.com. That's Eric, E-R-I-K, @onairbrands.com. And if you aren't already subscribed to the show, you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, or any other podcast platform. And please recommend us to one or two people in your circle. That will go a long, long way to growing our community. Also, if you could rate us on iTunes, just take a moment to give us 5 stars. And if they have more stars, give all of them. We'd greatly appreciate you for that. And always, always like, subscribe, and share this show on social media. We'd love you for that as well. And if you have any ideas or want to hear something on a future show, please hit us up. Maybe you have a question for one of my guests or you want to tell a story, a success story. We'd love to hear from you. You can do that, especially if you're on the Anchor platform. You can leave us a voice message. We'd love to incorporate you and your voice on a future episode. Once again, folks, thanks again for listening to the Entrepreneur Circle. Please like, subscribe, and share. I am Eric Cabral, and as always, remember, your network is your net worth. So get in the circle.